This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about Everybody Wants Some, God's Not Dead 2, I Saw the Light, and Krisha. I'll also be talking about the news, the trailer park, I've got two interviews to go through, and of course, the box office predictions and the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the interwebs at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, you can find me at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is something different than the rest of it, so I'm going to back into all the Batman stuff later. But the one thing I want to talk about is that anti-vaccine documentary that was pulled from Tribeca. It's called Vaxxed, and it's directed by the guy who was discredited for having the study that connects the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine to autism. That, like I said, has since been discredited and denounced, and he had a primary interest in a separate vaccine, so it was in his best interest to suppress the use of the multi-vaccine, and so he got in a lot of trouble for that. But he's made a documentary. Now, what's interesting about this is Robert De Niro, who's got a child with autism, has accepted that to the Tribeca Film Festival, which he's in charge of. But after some huge backlash and response, he's come out and said, okay, no, we're not going to show it. We're not going to show it because scientific consensus and everything. Here's my take on this. And it's sort of like my take on, even though this has nothing to do with movies, the cell phone that the FBI has been trying to and has finally successfully hacked into of the San Bernardino shooters. I think that they should show Vaxxed at Tribeca. They should. And it has nothing to do with the content of the documentary because I think it's hogwash. It's absolute bonkers. It is not true. Vaccines do not cause autism. That has been disproved, and all the evidence saying that it has been discredited. However, you accepted the documentary to play at your film festival. That's why you should show it. The time for saying, no, this is hogwash and nonsense and we shouldn't show it, has passed when you accepted that documentary to play. Now coming back and retroactively pulling it is a bad thing. It's the same thing with the San Bernardino cell phone. I'm all for the FBI hacking that phone. I don't think Apple should help them. So I'm kind of glad that they hacked the phone, because Apple should not give the government backdoor access to its tech. Now, if the government can figure it out, that's what they do. These are non-popular opinions that are going through. They should show Vaxxed at Tribeca for no other reason than it was accepted into the film festival in the first place, and pulling it for political reasons is bad form. Now, let's talk about Batman. First of all, the little bit of news is Ben Affleck has finished his script for the standalone Batman movie, which is great. I can't wait to see that one. I thought Ben Affleck made a phenomenal Batman in Batman vs. Superman, and I want to see what he's a great director and a really good writer. And people can't get their brain around that. The fact that he hasn't won a directing Oscar, but Argo won Best Picture, and he's done some great stuff. So I'm all for the Ben Affleck movie. But what's funny about Batman vs. Superman, and this dovetails into the box office, which we'll talk about later, I have never seen people so upset with a movie than I have when it came to Batman vs. Superman. I mean, the people who didn't like it were upset. And I don't like movies all the time, but it doesn't ruin my day. But the people who don't like Batman versus Superman, not only are they mad at the fact that the movie exists, they're mad at the entirety of DC Comics, they're mad at Zack Snyder, and they're mad at anybody who doesn't agree with them, including the movie going public, who helped the movie gross $166 million over the weekend. Before the movie was released, all you saw were think pieces about how bad the reviews are. And there was this arrogance to this where the critics and the actual, and I'm not putting myself in there, but because I don't write these stories, but the online press are writing stories about, look how terrible this movie's doing and look how awful the reviews are. It's going to tank. And then it didn't. And they got really upset about that because their prediction was wrong. And then as it did so well and broke all these records, they're coming up with excuses. Well, it was all pre-sales, which isn't true. First of all, there's only a portion of pre-sales. It's actually a lot of people walking up to the box office. But then it spurred a bunch of think pieces on Monday about are critics relevant? And, you know, you got to be careful creating a narrative because you may not like what that narrative comes to. Critics do not drive box office. What critics do is getting the reviews gets the word out. It gets the buzz going, good or bad. And it maybe helps with name recognition. Now, good reviews can help prop up a movie. And sometimes bad reviews can tear down a movie. But not on a movie like this. This is so big, it's irrelevant what the critics think. Basically, you had an effect that happened twice last year in two different circumstances. One of them is Mad Max. When Mad Max came out in the summer, overwhelming critical praise. It was not the biggest hit of the summer. It was not the biggest action movie of the summer. In fact, it kind of got lost until it started showing up in best of the year lists and awards, which are voted on by the same people who wrote these reviews. Then when it got an Oscar nomination, suddenly everyone's like, oh, look at us. Look how relevant we are. It's just you're the same people voting for the awards. But then you had Fantastic Four come out last August. And it followed the same beats as Batman vs. Superman. It was a troubled production, had a questionable trailer. Then it had the reviews come in, and they were terrible. And then there are all these stories about how bad the reviews were. The movie comes out, and it bombs. And suddenly, the egotistical, hipster, younger version, under 30 movie press from the internet, who lives on social media and does not exist in a world outside of it, suddenly thought they were irrelevant, and they had an effect. The reality is that Fantastic Four was never going to do well. Fantastic Four had no big stars in it of any sort of note. It came out in August. It was a troubled production. It's not exactly a well-known team. It's, you know, I mean, there's been two other movies, three if you count the Roger Corman one that never got released. Batman and Superman alone can carry a movie to greatness just by those names. And apparently the movie connects with a certain audience, and that's great. But I've seen people so mad. I made a comment on Twitter, and then people were there trying to convince me I was wrong in liking the movie. And I'm like, well, it's an opinion. I like the movie. Oh, well, it has logic holes. Yeah, so does The Dark Knight Rises. You want to? I would put the logic holes in Batman versus Superman against The Dark Knight Rises any day. The Dark Knight Rises, I think people are going to look back at that and say it's ambition, but it's not a good movie. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. First, one more Batman news. Let's talk about Lego Batman. This is going to be a lot of fun. It opens on February 10th.
Were you looking at the old family pictures again?
No, I wasn't.
Sir, I've seen you go through similar phases in 2016 and 2012 and 2008 and 2005 and 1997 and 1995 and 1992 and 1989 and that weird one in 1966.
I have aged phenomenally.
Do you want to talk about how you're feeling?
What? No, I don't want to do that.
Sir.
No.
Sir.
No, 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 no.
Sir.
No, 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 no. Gosh, I hope we're recording that.
Why I love this trailer is because it pokes fun at itself. It pokes fun at the Batman franchise, and it exists completely outside of the existing Batman franchises in the movies. It's exactly the same tongue-in-cheek flavor you got with the Lego movie. Lego Batman looks like a lot of fun, and it actually shows that Warner Brothers is doing some interesting things by compartmentalizing all of their stories. Gotham doesn't exist in the same universe that Batman versus Superman does, as opposed to like Daredevil existing in the same universe that the Avengers does. In that way, if one of the properties goes bad, they have insulated the other ones and it doesn't rot everything. I'm looking forward to Lego Batman. The next one is Lights Out, a horror movie opening on July 22nd.
Every time I turn off the lights, there's this woman waiting in the shadows.
I see her too. Each one of us is being haunted by this thing.
Produced by James Wan, and I think it's going to be an interesting movie. I love ghost stories, and I love what James Wan has done for ghost stories. I love the fact that these are no longer just shaky cam found footage nonsense movies. These are legitimate, scary, creepy, atmospheric films. I'm looking forward to this one. Is it going to be as big of a hit as The Conjuring? Probably not. But still, it looks like it could scare somebody. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I got to talk about God's Not Dead 2 and I Saw the Light. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies coming back to do some movie reviews. Let's kick things off with a post-Easter review of God's Not Dead 2, which I think they completely missed the boat on the name of this movie. It should have been called God's Still Not Dead. It's like The Fly 2. It should have been called Son of the Fly. The first film was about trying to prove God is or is not dead, the existence of God. That's not even what this movie's about. It's more about a historical Jesus and maybe a little bit of religious persecution. It's kind of a mess. Anyways, here's what the movie's about. A high school history teacher is put on trial after she answers a student's question about Jesus.
If we sit by and do nothing, the pressure that we're feeling today will mean persecution tomorrow.
One of your students sent a text to their parents. Did this happen?
If you're asking whether I responded to a student's question, yes.
And your answer incorporated the words of Jesus.
What were you thinking, Grace?
The Thollies are asking that you be fired, plus revocation of your teaching certificate.
How do we make this go away and not get blood on our hands?
We let the ACLU do it.
We're going to prove once and for all that God is dead.
Before I even talk about the movie, can we address the elephant in the room here? Melissa Joan Hart plays this teacher. She also has been known for playing Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Her character is on trial here. Ergo, this is a witch trial. I so wanted somebody to say it was a witch trial, but they never do in the movie. All joking aside, I actually went and watched God's Not Dead, the original, a couple weeks ago. It was on Amazon Prime. And holy cow, that movie is terrible. I know it made $62 million off a $2 million budget, and I know that it was a big success, and evangelicals flocked to it. It's based on basically a meme that strawmans atheism. And I'm not an atheist, and I'm not defending atheism as a way of belief, but it presents atheists as just these evil, maniacal psychopaths. It makes them so easy to take down in the movie. In the original, like Kevin Sorbo, he plays this atheist professor and he gets mad at his wife or girlfriend for reading, literally says, oh, you've been reading again. And then they have these straw man arguments for everything. What they did in the first movie, they do with this one where they throw in a bunch of random subplots that never go anywhere, that never are wrapped up and never addressed again. There's this whole weird little subplot of one of the preacher from the first movie is on the jury in this one. And he's with a bunch of other pastors, and they're like, oh, they're subpoenaing our sermons, which is going off of this actual subpoena that happened in Houston when they thought that there was hate speech going on in certain churches. But they offer no context for this. They're not trying to find whether or not there's hate speech involved. They're just saying, oh, they're subpoenaing. So, oh, persecution, persecution. This movie reminds me of watching an Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode, the one where they were having an intervention on Charlie, and instead of actually having a real intervention, they just come running and pointing and screaming, intervention, intervention. That is what this movie's like. Persecution, persecution, you're persecuting Christians, persecuting. The movie exists outside of any sort of known reality. It's in this weird little paranoid delusion where people think that Christians are being gunned for, basically, that everyone's being persecuted. And yeah, you can always find some random story about somebody having an issue. And even at the end of the movie, they throw on the screen like dozens of apparently true accounts of people who have been sanctioned or censored at school. And some of them I was reading because they go so fast, you can't read all of them. But some of them seem perfectly reasonable, like a kid going to school and handing out invitations to his youth group. You really can't do that in school. because that's kind of proselytizing. It's an estate school. And here's the thing. My wife's a teacher. And I showed her the trailer and she got incensed by the trailer. There's a reason for some of this. She has a kid in her class right now who's a Jehovah's Witness. The kid has every right to be a Jehovah's Witness. His parents have every right to be a Jehovah's Witness. The kid doesn't do the Pledge of Allegiance because that's how the Jehovah's Witnesses are. And they just account for that. That it doesn't stop everyone else from doing it, but the kid doesn't do it. This movie, there's so many things wrong with the film that the logic doesn't even hold. They get biblical things wrong, which is amazing. Like, one thing, they're talking about the Bibles and the accounts of the Gospels, and they're like, oh, well, and she says something like, Mark recorded. I'm like, well, if you know anything about Bible history, the actual history of how it came about, these things weren't written down for years. Everyone thought when Jesus said, I'm coming back, they thought he was going to come back before they died. And he didn't. And so then they're like, oh my gosh, we better write this stuff down. So all this stuff was actually recorded many, many years later. It makes no sense. This is not how schools work. This is not how courtrooms work. This is not how life works. And it also confuses the idea of actually the right to believe with the right to practice. Now, you can believe whatever you want to. And I don't think anyone in any form of life anywhere in this country is saying you can't. But what you can't do is you can't practice that belief where it interferes with somebody else's belief or violates law. God's Not Dead 2 is an absolute wreck of a movie. It's a train wreck. It is nonsensical. It doesn't even make logical internal sense. But it's probably going to do really well, you know, because it feeds into that idea that we're being... It literally says we're at war. And I'm like, really? You're starting to get you some pretty violent talk for a supposedly nonviolent movie. God's Not Dead 2 is terrible. It sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is I Saw the Light. Tom Hiddleston stars as country crooner Hank Williams in this biopic.
Let's give a rousing welcome to Mr. Hank Williams.
All right, boys, let it roll.
Good. When he first came to see me, he played some songs he'd written and I offered him a contract right then and there.
Something up with me.
Do you love me?
Most of the time I do.
Said, hey, sweet baby.
Congratulations. You have a son, Mr. Williams.
He's going to have a real dad. Not like it was for me.
It's a brand new recipe.
He's drinking like a fish.
I have seen a lot of musician biopics. And they all tend to go through the same motions. It was very apparent about 10 years or more when Ray came out and Jamie Foxx won an Oscar for the performance. And then like a year later, Walk the Line came out. And it really just felt like Walk the Line was kind of like Ray, only with a white guy who wasn't blind. I know that Johnny Cash and Ray Charles were very different musicians and they had very different music and they had very different lives, but they all ran through the same problems of drugs and alcohol and sex and issues as they grew up. And even when they did Jersey Boys a couple of years ago, which was a musical based on the Four Seasons and then Frankie Valli, it still runs the same problems where people's life kind of fall apart. And you get that with I Saw the Light. I mean, there's nothing terribly unique about what you see in I Saw the Light. And I don't blame the movie because this is a biopic. This is about Hank Williams. And this is, you give somebody enough money who's a creative type person who isn't necessarily the most grounded individual, and you might get some substance abuse and sex issues. That's going to happen to everybody. So you tend to follow the same path in these musician biopics. And like I said, I'm not complaining about the movie itself. I'm just saying you're going to see a lot of what you've seen before. But it's a well-done movie. I mean, Tom Hiddleston's great. I mean, he really becomes the character, and he really becomes the authentic country boy, even though he's British. And Elizabeth Olsen, who was... You know Tom Hiddleston as Loki, and Elizabeth Olsen was in the last Avengers movie. She does a great job as his estranged wife. I mean, it's actually... The performances are the reason to see the movie. Or if you're a huge diehard Hank Williams fan and you want to see a movie about his life. But still, I'm going to say, I Saw the Light kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Everybody Wants Some, plus an interview with the stars.
Oh.
seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse, Kevin Carr's new novelettes Not the End and Gobble offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr continuing with the movie reviews. Let's talk about the new Richard Linklater movie, which is Everybody Wants Some. Richard Linklater directs this spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused, the story of some college freshmen on a baseball team making their way through their first weekend on campus.
This ain't high school, man. We had a new level here.
I'd like to introduce you to the new guys. Two rules. No booze in this house. Number two, no girls upstairs in those bedrooms.
I'm seriously worried about these new guys. No!
Look at what we have here.
Hey, ladies.
Party later tonight at the baseball houses.
You should be investing this energy elsewhere.
Lesbians.
I like the quiet guy in the backseat.
First of all, I figure I need to at least have a confession here. I'm not a big fan of Richard Linklater. I did not like Boyhood. I thought Boyhood was a mediocre movie, but an interesting cinematic experiment, though I didn't think it made a great movie. I've never liked Dazed and Confused. I've always thought Dazed and Confused was mean-spirited, shallow, and at times offensive to just everyday life. Richard Linklater, at least from seeing his movies, it seems that he was a guy who went to high school, smoked a lot of pot, had a lot of sex, and had a very, very specific type of experience in high school, and just assumes everybody else had that exact same experience. And some did, and some don't, but I think he's kind of a narrow-thinking filmmaker. Now, with that said, I went and saw Everybody Wants Some. I kind of liked it. And I liked it because even though they're saying spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused, I think the real mean-spirited nature of it and the real glorification of douchebaggery is reduced quite a bit. The other thing about Everybody Wants Some versus Dazed and Confused is Dazed and Confused was a champion of smoking pot and partying. And while there's drug use and booze in Everybody Wants Some, it's kind of compartmentalized into that first weekend of college. They're caricatures, as opposed to being people that you really want to have as good characters. The main character, was Jeremy London, who starred in Dazed and Confused. He was held up as a hero, but he really wasn't. He was just sort of this jerk jock who just kind of butted heads with his coach. And in this movie, Blake Jenner plays, he's the audience surrogate, where he goes to school and he's seen all these crazy characters, and it's just a bunch of guys in a house goofing off and causing problems for each other. It's sort of like Revenge of the Nerds before the Alpha Betas became the Alpha Betas. When they were nice guys and just made fun of each other. But it is just a group of guys ragging on each other and kind of cutting loose that first weekend, and it's not defining their entire life. And in that sense, it's kind of fun. I actually had a chance to interview three of the guys. I'm going to play it here in a minute. Tyler Heckner, Blake Jenner, and Will Britton. And all we did was sit down in a conference room and do this little interview. But it was like hanging out with friends. I mean, they were cool guys, and it was very funny, and they were goofing off, but they seemed like nice guys. And that's really kind of the characters. I think there's a charm to the characters, and Everybody Wants Some. I mean, it still is just a weekend party movie. That's really all it is. But I don't think it's trying to be more than that. Whereas I think Dazed and Confused was trying to pay tribute to all of the 70s, good and bad, but make it all good. And it was trying to make these significant statements back when Linklater was a lot less subtle with his work. So I'm going to have to say Everybody Wants Some kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Like I said, I had a chance to interview a couple of the guys from it. And of course, it's an ensemble cast. There's about 12 of them in there. Tyler Hoechlin is one of them. He plays McReynolds in the movie. He's also best known for Teen Wolf. He's really good looking. And he's also with Blake Jenner, who was on Glee. And then Will Britton, who's relatively new. I think he's going to be in Skull Island, but he's starting out in the industry. So it was nice to sit down and talk with them, and here's the little bit of time I spent with them. Was it intimidating to do this movie on the two levels of not just being sort of the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused, and was it looked at it that way, and it was following a Boyhood?
I don't think we felt any pressure with Dazed and Confused because, you know, it's got the same spirit and everything, but it's like two completely different movies. So I don't think anyone was going in there thinking like, oh, we got to live up to Dazed and Confused. For me, it was intimidating, you know, at first coming in there and working with Rick, I think was the most intimidating thing because you want to do well and you want to learn from him. And he's such an amazing director. And
it was definitely intimidating coming in with it being Richard Linklater just because huge director. But with the Boyhood, I think all of us were pretty excited at the fact that Boyhood was taking off and we were going to be a part of that wave a little bit with Rick's next film. I think, you know, we were just excited that it had such great success critically and with fans.
When we showed up, Boyhood was still, it was definitely in being talked about a lot, but it also was kind of gathering a lot of steam while we were there. So it wasn't to the point that it got to, you know, when we first showed up. So I think it's kind of, we're more just excited to kind of, like Will was saying, ride that with Rick a little bit because it was picking up steam as we went. And it really just kind of put even more energy into us, I think.
One of the things with the movie is it's steeped in nostalgia for anybody who's from the 80s. And you're all relatively young guys.
Yeah.
So how did you capture the nostalgia and sort of make it real?
Well, I think at first, I think we're all a little intimidated by the time period. At least I was. You know, you want it to seem real. You want to embrace it fully. But as Tyler said before, when we came on and we started working, Rick said, the more things change, the more they stay the same. So that was pretty comforting because then we started thinking, okay, you know, music changes, styles change, you know, fads change, but people, the way that they approach situations like that, finding yourself, meeting a new group of people and having fun and enjoying the ride of life, especially over a 3-day weekend, that never changes. But Rick was always there to offer any advice with like the time period and everything from like handshakes to, you know, dates of music and dances and everything like that. We called him Rickipedia for a little while because he used to tell us he would know things like to the T, probably the minute that things were created and like the date and everything. He was kind of our time period coach from the future.
You know, when you read the script, it didn't feel like you were reading the script from 1980. It didn't feel like you were reading the script from 2015. It was just a good script about a bunch of guys hanging out, having fun. And it didn't feel like we had to bring anything to it to create, to make it feel like the 80s.
Was that your own facial hair?
Oh, and my sash, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
When you had to grow it, did you fully own it outside of the movie as the 70s porn star look?
Yeah, we absolutely had to. We didn't really have a choice. So I grew out the beard, and then once we got there, took the beard down and the stash stayed. I can prove it. My passport photo is sporting that same mustache because I had to renew it while we were shooting. And yeah, so for the next 10 years, my passport photo will look more like McReynolds than me.
On a little more serious tone, I'm just sort of reacting to the, not just the movie, but the time period. With all the talk of bullying that's been going on, especially in movies, and I mean, how did you deal with that and how did you internalize it to go with the modern audience?
You can't really take a movie like this and apply modern day sensibilities to it without kind of tainting what the movie is. The movie is about, and it's 1980. It's a snapshot. It's a view into the world of these guys in 1980. And to that sense, I mean, I think, you know, the bullying thing and everything nowadays, like if you look at the hazing that goes on in this, it's really hard to even call it hazing. You know, it's really just guys giving guys a hard time and challenging each other, which, I mean, that was my experience with playing college ball as well. You're kind of just really pushing each other to see like what they're made of. Whereas like bullying today, especially when things like social media, things like that, it's such a different sense of the word. I mean, people really kind of take it to a new level now, and we really want to stay true to the period. And I thought it was very honest and, you know, just a true snapshot into what that time period was.
You've mentioned a couple times that you play college ball. There was only one baseball scene, really.
Yeah. I don't know if it was an advantage or anything. I know Rick said, you know, with the role of McReynolds, definitely, he is kind of the All-American on the team, so he knew he needed to have someone who could really be a believable ball player. So I'm sure it didn't hurt. But again, like you said, it's not really a baseball movie. There's a little bit of baseball in the movie, but it's about these guys. And as someone who, you know, grew up in that environment, that was the most fun part of it, was feeling like I was back in college with a group of guys in a locker room kind of feeling again.
I'd never played baseball in my life. I'd like played football a little bit, basketball. I wrestled in high school for a little while, but never touched a baseball. So we all had to like put audition tapes together, and mine was terrible. Mine was so bad. Like, I had to go to the batting cages twice. The first time I didn't hit anything. The second time I was having like diagonal hits. Like, it would touch the ball and it was like 50 Cent pitching at the Dodgers game and it would go the other direction. Tyler and the guys who'd played before, they were totally like big brothers from that, you know, before, you know, they didn't give us a chance to not look authentic either. Like, they were behind the scenes, like giving us, you know, coaching us from afar.
If you liked what you heard on that interview, you can hear an extended interview. Just go to fatguysatthemovies.com and search for Everybody Wants Some. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to give a review of Krisha, talk about the box office and the home cinema roundup with an interview with the Natural Born Pranksters. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys in the Movies. Getting into the final segment with one more movie review to talk about. And that is Krisha. It's a smaller independent film being released by A24. And I just a real quick note about A24. They do some great stuff. They do a lot of movies that are out of the box and very different. And they've done some very innovative stuff. Like a couple years ago, they did Enemy and Under the Skin. Last year, they did Ex Machina. And this one is definitely different and it's independent. A woman estranged from her family finally joins them for Thanksgiving for a tense holiday gathering.
What have you been doing?
I have tried to become a better human being.
There's a lot you missed. But you got a lot of fixing to do.
Are you mad at me?
You are a leaver. You are heartbreak incarnate. If you think you can just pop in and pop out of people's lives like this, you are malinformed.
What's funny is when I first started watching this movie, I didn't realize it was a narrative feature. For some reason, I had it in my head that it was a documentary, and it's not. It's sort of like if Terrence Malick did a found footage movie, even though it doesn't look like a found footage movie, but it has that one-shot feel to it. But it also has that Terrence Malick feel of this wandering camera that just kind of sweeps into scenes and out of scenes. And it's sort of this patchwork, hodgepodge quilt of a movie where scenes stick together and they sometimes are cohesive next to each other, but sometimes they're also kind of disjointed at times. And that's kind of cool. It's an experimental filmmaking style and it works. Ultimately, though, it shows a family that is relatively closely knit and this woman who's a bit of a train wreck coming back into the family, trying to straighten things out and trying to make amends with her family. And of course, things go wrong. It's a dysfunctional family movie. And while the performances are really neat, especially in sort of that fly in the wall presentation, it does travel similar routes that I've seen before. Sort of like how I Saw the Light repeats a lot of the things you see in musician biopics. Krisha repeats a lot of what you see in dysfunctional family movies. I usually like those movies if they're funny or entertaining to a certain degree. This isn't necessarily entertaining. I mean, really, honestly, if I wanted to see drunken explosions of obnoxiousness at a family function, I'd just go to my family functions. Not that it happens every time, but, you know, every family has their awkward family moments. Every family has that one or two Thanksgivings or Christmas or Easter where a fight starts or people yell at each other. Or somebody has a little bit too much to drink and acts inappropriately. I don't need to go to the movie theater to experience that. I have full access to that every holiday. At least the potential of that every holiday. So ultimately, Krisha is a well-acted film and it does tread similar ground. But it's impressive for how limited of scope it has and the techniques that it uses. But it's not a comfortable film to watch. And the families are a bunch of jerks. All of them, even the good guys, are kind of jerks. And I find it hard to muster much sympathy for them. But that's just me. I'm a little bit judgmental that way. Anyways, I'm going to have to say that Krisha kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about box office winners. And was I correct? I, of course, accurately said that Batman vs. Superman was going to win the box office. My prediction was $150 million. I was actually lowballing it a bit. But I was off. It actually did better than that. The final number came in at $166 million, which doesn't break all the records that Warner Brothers had in terms of highest opening weekends, but certainly for March. What's interesting about this movie is there's no comparison to it. The closest you could get is maybe Hunger Games, but then again, Hunger Games was an original movie. It was not a part of a series or using existing characters that had already had big movies made out of it very recently. This is essentially a sequel to Man of Steel. And all the Marvel movies all take place in the summer. I mean, the earliest you can get is a May release. This is playing out very similar to Iron Man 3. Maybe Avengers Age of Ultron, but all those were summer movies. And you can't judge it because, of course, everybody wants to downplay the success of Batman versus Superman. And I've heard people say, well, it's just such a low Sunday. The Sunday number was like 33 million, but that was Easter Sunday. And then the numbers throughout the week are a little bit lower, you know, as it dips in the middle of the week. But that's because everyone's going back to school after spring break, as opposed to an early May release where people are starting getting ramped up for summer mode. Nights are longer. People stay out later. It's a different pattern. There is no comparison to Batman versus Superman in this time frame. And then, of course, My Big Fat Greek Wedding did almost $18 million. I said about $15 million. That was right on par with what it was going to be for counter-programming. I thought it was going to do fine. This week, you're going to see a huge drop for Batman versus Superman. It has nothing to do with the quality of the movie, but has to do with the fact, A, that it had like a $27.5 million opening Thursday. So you got to take that completely out of the equation and take that out of its pure Friday number. And all of these movies tend to be front-loaded. You're going to see a 65% drop or so. I think you're going to get 60 to 65 million this weekend, which ain't bad. And there's no other real competition. I mean, I really don't think God's Not Dead 2 is going to give it a run for its money. Batman vs. Superman is fine. It's doing great guns overseas, pushing 600 million going into the weekend. So yeah, it's going to make that 800 million threshold and then some. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Couple big movies out this week. Some award films. The Hateful Eight, one of the best movies of last year. I loved it. Quentin Tarantino doing something different. Polarizing his audience a little bit, but I still thought it was a great movie. Concussion is also out there with Will Smith, who got no awards for this one, but that's okay. Point Break, which nobody remembered, nobody asked for. I guess it's out. Who cares? It's on DVD. Mystery Science Theater 3000 has another release. Four great movies. You got Teenage Caveman. Well, Teenage Caveman is not a great movie. It's barely watchable with MST. But they do have Being from Another Planet, which I think it was what Time Walker was what it was originally released as in the 80s. 12 to the Moon is also in that box set. And that's a great one as this... They don't make those astronaut movies like this anymore, like Rocket Ship XM and Journey to the Seventh Planet and those kind of exploration movies. And this is what this one, it's so cheap. It's so cheap they couldn't afford visors on their helmets. And then Deathstalker, which is apparently the third in a series of medieval fantasy movies. It's nonsensical and hard to follow at times, but it is absolutely hilarious. It's one of the seventh season Mike episodes in which Dr. Forrester's mom, Pearl Forrester, it was a sidekick because it was after the loss of TV's Frank. There's also Natural Born Pranksters on DVD. And I got a real quick interview with the three guys from that, Roman Atwood, Dennis Rudy, and Vitaly Zodorovsky, I think is how you say his name. So I want to play that really quick before we go. Do you ever feel people saying, hey, you're being mean-spirited or you're bullying people?
I would say the reveal of our reactions kind of speak for itself. A lot of times people, after the prank is done, they're so relieved and happy it's not real situation and that it was just a joke. Mm-hmm. And then the reveal sometimes is the best part.
You know, to be honest, I haven't ever heard bullied, maybe mean-spirited a couple times, but we always come back with something that makes you feel good. So
I always say there's a camera.
You can get away with anything with a camera.
How often do you get it where somebody just absolutely is so upset that they don't want to be used at all, or they get mad at you, or take legal action? How often does that happen?
One out of every 50 reactions.
I would say it's like a one. It's Dennis, by the way. I'd say it's like a 1% ratio, whatever.
I feel like for YouTube, it doesn't happen as much. For the movie, we had it happen a lot. We were filming out in Los Angeles.
Yeah, bad area.
So people are used to, well, you're going to pay me if I'm going to be in that movie. We had more of that, but, you know, sometimes there's a real big tactic to getting releases. Sometimes you have to wait weeks to call them back, or you let them cool down, or give them a couple hours, buy them a coffee.
You know, cash or something.
I mean, you got to really sell it.
Were any of the pranks that you didn't, have any of them never been able to be released because of people not wanting to be involved, or the best reactions, people not signing the release, or do you usually get that release?
No, some really cool bits that end up going really well you can't use because people won't release you. You know, sometimes you'll see a blurred face. Sometimes we can get away with that too.
And sometimes they just run. And like you can't get them. Like, for example, well, I guess it wasn't in the trailer, but yeah, it happened in certain situations in the prank where it's not a bad situation. They think that they're making out with some cash, and we don't have time to show them. They figure out later, and they're taking off because they want the money.
I mean, have you like seriously hurt yourself, and then no one believed you? Just on an everyday basis?
No, not yet, at least.
No, but just for fun, when I have family over, I just set up random cameras all over the house. No reason. It just makes them so scared all night.
Is there a line you wouldn't cross? Is there anywhere that would be going too far, do you think?
Anything really crazy in the outside world is only done to family and friends. We wouldn't do it in the public. You know, we wouldn't murder somebody in public.
But you murder them in the backyard.
But we can murder them in front of our family.
But
there's a lot of things that we actually don't do. It seems that we do anything, but there's a lot of things that we don't touch on.
And like everybody wants some, if you want my full interview with the Natural Born Pranksters, check it out at fatguysatthemovies.com. That's it for this week. We had a lot to talk about, and I got more to talk about next week. That's when I'm going to be talking about The Boss, Hardcore Henry, One More Time, Remember, and Midnight Special. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.